97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
We have Sue's News coming up here for a Wednesday afternoon. Sans Sue, I was told the briefing yesterday, the Mark Reardon Show briefing, said Frank Ladd was going to handle those.
Well, that was fake news.
Yeah, it was fake news, apparently, because I've been told that it is Dave Klein now. Is that true? Frank, what happened? Were you not given the assignment?
You are fake news.
Dave was promoted above me.
Oh, there it is. So, Dave, can we count on you?
Yeah, you can count. Of course you can count on me.
In other words,
Frank
is like, no, I'm not doing that today. I got other stuff to do. You handle
exactly
it, Klein.
What I said.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Dave.
Before we get to Sue's News, let's visit with our own Mark Cox, who is getting ready for another event in his Senate Speaker Series tonight. How are you, Mr. Cox? Up from the nap, I'm assuming?
I am feeling very refreshed. Thank you, Mark, for noticing. I appreciate that.
So I was at the one, does it go back more than a month now, that you had with Eric Greitens when you kicked this off? It was a great turnout that night. Same thing tonight, same location, or you're somewhere else?
No, same place. We were with Eric Greitens back in the middle of July, and now we are going to have Mark McCloskey out there at 18 North Central tonight in O'Fallon, Missouri. They're just near Brian Roden 70. So we did have a great turnout. I'm hoping for the same tonight. It's free. It's open to the public. Doors open about 6 o'clock, and they got a great event space out there, as you were in. You saw that, and should be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, let me confess something. So when we were promoting this one, I can't believe it's already 2 months ago, I'm talking about the event, and I plan, you know, I was out there that night, and we kept mentioning 18 North Central. I'm like, well, that's pretty specific on the address. I didn't realize that the damn place was called 18 North Central. That's like the it's not just the address, it's the name of the joint. And it's a great space. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's all right. It's all right. It's like 18 North Central is like an adult playground.
They've got
the adult laser tag in like a 8 or 9,000 square foot warehouse, basically, where you can run around and you know, have pick teams and do team building and all that stuff. It's fantastic.
So essentially, that's what you'll be doing with Mark McCloskey tonight. He'll probably bring his own weapon for the laser tag. You guys will be running around. It's going to be a blast, Cox.
I've already joked this morning, thank you, that I was going to have to get one of those M4 lookalikes that they use for laser tag and make sure that he just carries it around the whole time while we're doing the interview. It'll be perfect.
So here's, and maybe you can ask this question, because I am a person who does not take his candidacy very seriously, mainly because I don't think he's a Republican or a conservative. Now, I made that mistake in the past about Donald Trump. I didn't trust his conservative credentials. But does Mark McCloskey belong in this race?
Well, you know, I think he does. And here's the thing. I'm like you, when this whole thing first happened and suddenly we're finding out about Mark McCloskey and he's talking about the Castle Doctrine and his Second Amendment rights. I also thought, well, you know, I've been dealing with conservative radio and politicians around here for many years, and I've certainly never heard of him. And as a trial attorney, very many of them would not fall into that category. But having met Mark a number of times and had him on the show, I just think it's something that he pretty much kept under his hat all these years for the most part. And to hear him tell it, and I'm hoping he'll tell this story again tonight, because I've heard him tell it in a couple of his Trump speeches. When this happened to him, he was floating along perfectly happy in his life as an attorney there in the city, and this sort of awakened something in him. When he was traveling around the country and he was campaigning for Donald Trump in 2020, he realized that he had a story to tell and felt like he could make a difference. Now, he's going to have a lot of convincing to do. I think he realizes after that last poll that came out, which had him at dead last at like 5% in that Remington poll that was carried in the Missouri Scout. He's got an uphill battle. I think he realizes that.
But the format tonight is, if you want to show up, just get there. At what time are you going to start? At 6:30 tonight?
So, yeah, doors open at 6. We're hoping to get started right at 7 o'clock, and people can submit questions when they come in. We'll have some cards there. You can fill out your question, and I'm going to be asking Mark, my questions, and then we're going to read some questions from the audience as well. You saw it last time with Eric Greitens. It's one thing to get somebody on the radio for 10 minutes. It's something different to be in a room with somebody for 60 minutes or more and see how they handle questions and body language, and it's just, it's a whole different world.
Well, and I thought from my perspective too, maybe not everyone else in the room, but I liked watching the reactions from everyone in the room just to the different issues too. That was interesting. All right, well, have fun with it tonight. I can't make it out tonight. Got a swim lesson with the little one, Mark Cox, but I know it's going to be fun. The Senate Speaker Series at 18 North Central tonight in St. Charles. Have a good time with Mr. McCloskey.
We will do it, Mark Rudin. Thank you.
Yeah, take care. 413, 97.1 FM Talk. Charles Lipson's coming up. He is a good friend of the show, professor emeritus of political science at the University of Chicago. We'll address some of the constitutional issues with the vaccine mandates. And Shannon Robinson, who is the St. Louis Citizen Supporting Kids and Community Leader, has filed a lawsuit against the Department of Health and Senior Services. Shannon has been awesome, an awesome resource in some of the masking debates, and even with CRT, but she has now filed a lawsuit. We'll explain that in the next hour on 97.1 FM Talk. All right, so Ladd is going to be in here. He's going to respond. Fred's in here as well this afternoon. But
Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Kenny. But now it is time for the Soulless News, right?
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, not necessarily.
You are fake news.
Not today.
Well, you know, Mark, I took some time putting these stories together, but the first one, I need to give credit to Fred.
Really?
Fred found this one for me, and you will appreciate this as a Bruce Springsteen fan.
Okay.
An exhibition celebrating Bruce Springsteen's legendary live performances will open October 1st at the Grammy Museum Experience in Newark, New Jersey. The interactive exhibition will include instruments, stage outfits, and memorabilia from tours over the years. It will stay in New Jersey until March of 2022, and then it will travel to the Grammy Museum in L.A. in the fall
of
2022.
Look at that. You kind of scooped me on some Springsteen news. I was unaware.
How many times have you seen him live, Mark?
I can't. I don't know the number. Really, it's in the 40s. It's approaching 50.
Is it really? That's crazy.
Well, you have to also understand that it's full band.
That's tours. A misspent youth.
Well, it's not youth. It's adult. Oh, it was all after my youth.
Well, there you go.
Well, the River Tour was 1981 here at the arena, but I'm one of those weirdos. Miklas is like this too, but he's even weirder. Bernie's seen Bruce more than 100 times, but you're talking full band shows. You're talking solo shows. And, you know, those combined, I would go. You guys have known me where I've gone on the road and seen four or five shows in 1 year or even a 6 month stretch. So typically I'll see four or five shows on a tour. So
is there a best one that you've seen?
I always go back to that first show just because it was so magical.
Right.
But if I had to put a second best in there, man, there was another show in St. Louis from 7 or 8 years ago that would be on that list. They kind of, there's been so many, it's
hard. They kind of blur together
right
at this point. So have you met him? Have you had interactions with him or
I've
of the band?
I've shared that story before. I've known most of the band members and had most of the band members on
out to
my
your house,
show
that sort of thing?
Years. No. Over,
dinner?
Over the course of years on the show, I've gotten to know Nils Lofgren and Steve. But I sat next to Bruce at a movie
and
in Los
know.
Angeles. He did know
because
we chatted.
Okay.
Yeah, and Patty. I've shared this story before. It was just random. I was in Los Angeles 1990 with, I was there visiting an ex-girlfriend. It was going horrible. It's my last night. I go down to UCLA area, Westwood.
Sure.
It's that theater that was featured in the Tarantino movie, which is interesting too.
Cinerama type movie theater?
So I go in and I am pissed off because I have no money left, and I walk out of the restroom and there's a guy in a leather jacket that walks in, and I'm like, that was just Bruce Springsteen. So I walked into the theater. I sat behind Patty, who was with him. I figured there would be red hair, and I tapped him on the back. I said, hey, I don't mean to bother you. I know this isn't cool. They could not have been nicer. And then someone sat in front of her. They moved back, sat next to me. Bruce was on the aisle. And we
trying to get away from you.
Yeah. The movie was fantastic. Albert Brooks, Meryl Streep, Defending Your Life.
Was that the movie you intended to see?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you didn't follow him into a random movie theater or anything like that.
Well, because back then, you probably remember this. Certainly Fred does. But back then, this was a different time for movies. And I was already doing film reviews in Columbia, Missouri. So that was a movie. And I don't know if you've ever seen it, Defending Your Life.
I've not seen that one.
It was out before it opened in other parts of the country.
Sure.
They don't do that as much as they used to. They used to open them up limited in, you know, in some
New
markets.
New York, and LA, then wide.
And this was one of those movies that was like that, and it never became a big commercial hit or anything like that. But yeah, that was the one occasion.
But
it was one of those things where people said that. No, we didn't. I talked to Patty more than I did Bruce, but didn't ask for an autograph. This was way ahead of cell phones, but
no selfie.
It would have shattered my illusion. You know, I was actually just reading. There's this legendary story about Bruce Springsteen. In October of 1980, during the River Tour, he comes here to St. Louis. The River Tour stopped twice here, in the fall of 1980 and then January of 1981. He was, now think about it, this is right before John Lennon was killed, all right? So keep that in the back of your mind. He goes to, I think it might have been the High Point Theater. What was the other one that was in Clayton?
The Esquire?
Esquire?
No. Yeah. The other one that was... There was another in Clayton.
Shady Oak.
Okay. It might have been one of those. Somebody recognizes him. All right. This is a legendary story. People in the fan community, they know this, and other people, it's been in the post. Somebody recognizes him and says, hey, would you come over to my house for dinner? Brings him to the house. Mom's there. I don't remember all the details. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And he says, sure. You know, he accepts the offer.
I got nothing going on.
But think about how weird that is in context of just a random fan says, hey, come on over. Yeah, thanks, Dave. But that really, it really did happen. I have some friends here in St. Louis that know the family. So it's relatively one of those. It's not just an urban legend.
Sure.
It really did happen.
So since your movie theater experience with him, have you interacted with him at all since then and shared that story with him hey, I sat next to the movie theater?
No, but I would have given the opportunity. I've only been around the other band members. Bruce is a little hard to get to when you're backstage and you're in the E Street Lounge. He doesn't usually saunter on down like Nils and Steve and the other guys.
So you're buying those VIP tickets when you go to these shows?
Look, you're grilling me like I'm in a congressional panel
Dave,
right
Dave
now.
Only
I'm
has one story
reveal,
here.
I'm not
going to
reveal my concert going.
I'm Baylen Kleiner out here.
Thank you.
The band, let's put it this way, Frank. The band has taken great care of me over the years. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
Very cool.
And when he met him, Bruce said, hey, Mark, I'm a big fan of the Round Table.
No, he didn't, Dave.
Oh,
and
the Round Table didn't exist.
Trying to determine whether your Australian accent is worse or your New Jersey accent. Because it's a very, very close call.
Well, thank you. All right.
Do you have a second story?
No.
I do. I actually do.
I think Frank was trying to give you some cover there.
So, all right, next story. After the house failed to sell at
auction last year.
After the house failed to sell at an auction last year, the Mexican government are going to give away the house that El Chapo fled.
Oh, I like they're going to give it away?
In a national lottery today. It's happening today. Mexico's Institute...
Do you have to be vaccinated?
That's a great question. Mexico's Institute to Return Stolen Goods to the People website lists the house as only Casa in Culison. It's about 2,800 square feet and located perhaps appropriately in a neighborhood called Libertad or Freedom.
Okay.
The government values the two-bedroom home at $183,000. Officials who declined to be identified because they were not authorized to speak said they were surprised the house was getting so much attention because it's not really luxurious and there is no swimming pool.
Yeah.
In fact, even the neighbors didn't even know who was living there at the time.
Well, they do now, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. How crazy is that?
I'll take that as a little lottery gift.
A lot
right?
of tunnels, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, is there anything buried?
That's a great question.
Have they, like, checked the yard for
You would think
something.
So. Bodies? Cash?
Right.
Drugs? Guns?
Maybe right. a pet or two.
Well,
what was that?
That's on the bed.
Oh my gosh, was that? That was on the bed.
That's on the bed.
I never get down to that far of the bed because I restarted.
The warning that the bed's gonna end.
It is the warning that the bed's gonna end.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Well, do you want to stick with lottery news here?
Oh sure, Dave. Okay. Roll right into another lottery story.
Have you got your tickets?
No, not yet.
For today?
Is there another drawing coming up?
Yes, Powerball.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is there a big one?
450, some odd million, I think.
I see. When it approaches 700 million, that's when I get the tickets.
I've got mine.
Okay, I got
buy
mine.
My Jack Pack every week.
All right. The lottery news, a North Carolina man who bought scratch-off tickets from the same convenience store over 4 years is celebrating his third big prize. The North Carolina Education Lottery says in a news release that Terry Splawn of Concord, North Carolina, continued his good run of luck on Monday when his $20 ticket produced a $100,000 win. After state and federal taxes, he's going to take home close to $71,000.
So, well, wait a second. Is this another one of these guys that wins multiple times?
Yeah.
Okay.
Follow-up story. The investigation into why he's winning so often at this one particular store is underway, right?
I do not have that. It's questionable, right?
But every once in a while,
think?
Of course it does. But every once in a while, you got these weird things that happen where you have multiple lottery winners. I can't explain it either.
So in April 2017, he bought a ticket from the store and won $1 million. And 2 years later, he went to the store again, bought another scratch-off ticket, and won another $1 million prize.
Yeah, you can't win
How
if you don't play.
How crazy is that?
You
right.
can't win if you don't play.
I need
play.
To start playing scratch-offs.
Right, right. I know. Scratch-offs kind of the way to go. I got one more lottery story for you, actually. Okay? A Florida man won a $1 million prize in a lottery game the same day he and his wife opened an auto repair shop. Brian Woodle bought the $5 Gold Rush Supreme scratch-off ticket from a Circle K store in Callahan, and he was selected to receive a one-time lump sum payment of $880,000, said that it was his wife's and his dream to open up this auto repair shop, and on the same day, they won the lottery.
And they closed the auto repair shop. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for playing, right?
Right. Okay, and I got, sticking with Sue's theme here, I do have a random fact
of the day. Oh, random fact of the day. Here we go.
Yeah, okay. Hawaiian pizza was created in Ontario, Canada by Greek immigrant Sam Panopoulos in 1962.
There's your random fact for the day, and that wraps up another edition of Sue's News Without Sue, brought to you this afternoon by Dave Klein and Frank Ladd, a little bit, buying some time, I think.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
I have some t-shirts too, Dave.
We're going to do
something with my t-shirts too. I've been trying to sell them on eBay, and that's not going
really
well.
You're not going to give one to me? Come on.
I'll give one to you.
Great.
I will gift you one for sure. Whiskey Dickerson is my friend Luke Blatt, by the way. He bought the company. And
okay, I thought that sounded familiar.
I've known Luke for a long time. Yeah, he's been in the studio with us talking cycling and stuff like that. Charles Lipson is back with us this afternoon on 97.1, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Chicago, columnist with Real Clear. Charles, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing good, and I love that ad for the Rolling Stones. It was the best concert I ever went to in my life.
Well, you've only seen them once? What's wrong with you?
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, okay.
I've seen them multiple times, but in 1972, I had a third row seat. The opening act was Stevie Wonder.
How about that? Look at it. Where was that?
It was unbelievable.
Was that in Chicago?
No, it was at the Boston Garden.
The Garden. I'm going to see
the
Stones if it's not canceled because of COVID or another band member, you know, biting the dust. I'm going to see them November 6th in Las Vegas. And they're also coming
Have
here,
fun, obviously, my friend.
Week. Yeah, it's going to be good. Look, I like your – we've been talking about the vaccine mandates, and I want to approach this because your take here is interesting. You say, look, it's wrong for the president to say it's not about freedom. But Charles Lipson, you say it's also wrong for Republican governors, like maybe even ours here in Missouri, Mike Parsons, to say the same thing, that it's all about freedom. Explain that a little bit.
Well, I think that we live in an age where everybody kind of exaggerates everything. There's a trade-off between the freedom of choosing what you can do, your body, your choice, and the effects you have on others, which is why we want people to get various vaccines for communicable diseases. But what I really spend a lot of time, and that trade-off is just unavoidable, but what I spend a lot of time in the article on, the article's at Real Clear Politics, and it's free, is that I think the whole debate recapitulates a debate we've been having for now a century that deals with how progressives think the country ought to be run.
In what sense?
Well, if you look at what progressives want to do, what they think is that most government decisions should be made by experts in the bureaucracy, not by elected officials. decisions should be centralized in Washington. The old Constitution, they would call it the old Constitution, is the one that they say needs to be replaced with a living Constitution. That's what their judges have been doing since the late 1930s when Roosevelt threatened to pack the court. So a lot of the issues that are coming up now are old issues, and one reason they're coming up now is that for the first time in 80 years, progressives no longer control the courts.
Well, thank God for that, especially during this time, right?
I'm just telling you, it makes everything different.
So in this situation, though, Charles, with the mandates, I've been trying to think about this in so many different ways. Is there any way that the courts uphold this from your perspective?
No, I don't think they do.
I don't either.
I don't think that they necessarily uphold the governors who are saying that local school boards and local elected officials can't impose them either. That will depend upon different states and the state laws. I think a lot of the logic of federalism is that you want local officials to be making these decisions, but a lot of times the local officials may be the school board
or
the mayor, depending upon whether the school board itself is elected.
But in this situation, it's hard for me to believe that this administration doesn't realize that this is on constitutional tricky waters. But I also feel that they don't care from the standpoint, and maybe this is the less cynical view of this, that they're just hoping, or maybe that it just does, in fact, give cover to corporations and businesses that want to force employees to be mandated a vaccine, because then they get the vaccine numbers up. And in the end, if the courts throw it out, they say, look, we don't care because the vaccine numbers are up.
That's among the you are exactly right, and it's among the most troubling things that's happened in this administration. They did the exact same thing with the rent moratorium.
Right. Yeah.
They said, look, we don't think it's going to pass constitutional muster, meaning we think what we're doing is illegal. Why are we doing it? We're doing it partly for political reasons. We want to appease the far-left base of the party, but we're also doing it because it'll take the courts a little while to rule on this. And before they can rule, we can accomplish some of the illegal things we want to do.
Exactly.
Now, you raised the second point, which is that they are, in effect, telling large corporations who they want to actually mandate. Remember, they want to mandate everybody with over 100 employees, but they're threatening them, in effect. And all these companies, many of them want to go along anyway. So they'll just say, look, we're under pressure from the government. We're going to do this. But I think it's a very disturbing thing in a democracy. And I would say, as I've told you before, Mark, I think that this whole presidency is about bait and switch. This is not what Biden was elected to do. He was elected to sort of calm things down, to act as a moderate, to reach across the aisle, to act within constitutional bounds. Every president is, but he made a big point that he was going to do it differently from Trump, and that Trump hadn't, and he would. He's done none of that.
No, and I think that some of us knew that that probably wouldn't happen. But even you raise a great question here, and this is one of those things that the media doesn't do their job on. Why, this is one of Charles's questions from the column, why do all federal employees, including those with natural immunity, and I'm glad you threw that in there because natural immunity just doesn't get discussed. And I'm a believer in the vaccine. I want people to get vaccinated. But I also think the research on natural immunity is pretty clear as well. You said need to get vaccinations, but not the illegal immigrants arriving from Central America. I mean, how hypocritical would that be? Or is that?
It's totally hypocritical.
Yeah.
But it just tells you how feckless these policies are. They're not telling you the truth when they say it's all about the medical decisions, because if it were, then there would be decisions at the southern border. By the way, I think the southern border is a huge political problem for them, and I think it's a scandal. And I think their biggest risk on the southern border is that if people begin to connect it to violence in cities like Chicago and St. Louis.
So what
they'll just say, look, this is a lawless administration, and we need to restore law. Now, we need to make sure the police do their job properly, blah, blah, blah. We don't want them leaning on people's necks and killing them. But, you know, we have to have more law and order around here. And so I think that, but I think the administration, the reason the administration is doing this is that they realize that they could lose power over the issue of the resurgence of the pandemic. They ran on the fact that they could handle it better than Trump. And this is also a kind of exercise in preemptive blame shifting. If things don't go well, they'll say, well, the courts ruled it illegal,
sure,
the Republicans were against us, or Republican governors, blah, blah, blah.
No, there's no doubt about that. On the topic of those Republican governors, though, because you did mention them in the you know, the beginning of the comp, do you have a criticism of the Republican governors, too, when it comes to reaction?
I sure do. It seems to me that the whole idea of local control should be that if the mayor or the an elected school board in Miami wants to behave differently from one in Orlando or Jacksonville, I don't see why the logic of Governor DeSantis saying that they can't do that. Now, he would say, I'm defending the freedom of the parents, but as I said, there's this trade-off between the two, and state laws may differ. The law in Missouri may be different from the law in Florida.
Yeah, and I think it is. I mean, look, we've had some interesting trade-offs here just with the school boards that are requiring mask mandates. We've had municipalities like here in St. Louis City. It's still confusing right now, Charles. We have a mask mandate supposedly in the city of St. Louis. We do not have one in St. Louis County, although many people in St. Louis County think we have one because there was an order that was issued. It was never upheld. So I think part of the goal here is also mask confusion, seems to be.
Mask confusion.
Yes, masks. Oh, that was a miss on the part of the host, and you saved me there, so I appreciate it.
Well, that's my job, my
yeah,
friend.
No,
that's my job.
Where do you think, you know, the other thing about this vaccine issue is a lot of people think it's just distraction from Afghanistan and some of the other things that are happening in the country. But you raise a great point about just how Biden was elected and what people had as their expectations. They were different reasons. People were exhausted by Trump. They didn't like his position on the pandemic. But the administration has to know, because the polling is very clear right now, that there is a ton of blowback. It doesn't seem like people support much of what he's doing at all. Although, ironically, I guess maybe they're in their favor on this vaccine mandate issue, ironically.
Well, look, I think his big problem is that people are beginning to form an indelible impression that he's incompetent.
Yeah, in an uncomfortable way.
You form that impression yourself about different people, and when you do, it doesn't change. I mean, you don't go back and say, oh, gee, I used to think he was incompetent, but now I think he's correct.
Okay, but where does that, on the incompetency, though, where does that leave the country from this standpoint? Because you might be able to say that here in the fall of 2021, if there was a presidential election, you're going to ride it out. We're worried about incompetency. We have a chance for another direction. The chance for another direction in the White House in the next few years is Kamala Harris. Wait, that's not
right. And, boy, she's as popular as herpes.
Right. That's.
I mean, really, I think the competence issue is just not a resolvable one until the next presidential election. I think the bigger problem would be if people begin to think that he's cognitively declined, and this issue may actually come up as a byproduct of something that General Milley has done. This. We don't really know exactly what happened, but if he called the Chinese outside of the chain of command and did so because he thought President Trump was behaving irrationally, then the question is bound to arise, how do we know that the current president is behaving rationally? Do we have any evidence? I mean, not rationally, but I mean that he's cognitively
right.
All
well,
there.
Well, those are interesting questions, and you have done me a tremendous favor, Mr. Lipson, because you've walked me into a topic that I had not covered yet today on the show, and I have some audio along those lines with that topic of General Milley. So you get producer
credit. It's always
great
to talk to you,
Charles.
Mark.
I appreciate it. You have a great week.
You too.
Dave, you up to speed on all this stuff with General Milley and the allegations in this new book by Woodward and Costa?
It's a lot.
So Isaac Stanley Becker, who is with the Washington Post, he's the national political reporter. He's read the book, and he says, and this is what he told NPR about General Milley's actions. He had reviewed intelligence suggesting that the Chinese believed that the U.S. was preparing to attack at this time. He feared a hair-trigger situation in which there could be a miscalculation or a preemptive strike by China in an attempt to fend off this or get ahead of it. At the time, there were tensions over military exercises in the South China Seas. Those tensions were deepened by, his words, Trump's belligerent rhetoric toward China on the campaign trail. So Milley tried to, you know, tamp down those fears by saying the U.S. was stable and not preparing to lash out at China. So this comes out. Marco Rubio says if this is true, this is an act of treachery that poses a grave risk to our security and our constitutional order. And then this was Trump on Newsmax last night talking about this as well.
If it is actually true, which is hard to believe, that he would have called China and done these things and was willing to advise them of an attack or in advance of an attack, that's treason. For him to say that I was going to attack China is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
We used to have the soundbite from Saturday Night Live, Dave. Remember the Alec Baldwin? It's pronounced Gina. Right. And we got rid of that. We could have used it. We could have used it right there.
I got to find that again.
So that's Trump. Here's, I think Jen Griffin's done a great job over at Fox asking questions about all this stuff with Afghanistan. And here she is with John Kirby on this topic.
And was there anything unusual said to the Chinese counterpart in the phone calls as far as you understand?
Well, again, all I've seen is the same reporting that you've seen, Jen. I can't speak to the specifics of the conversation, a conversation that took place, obviously, before before this administration took office. But I would add, if I may, again, that it is not only common, it's expected that a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff would continue to have counterpart conversations. I mean, he is basically the chief of defense for the United States. We don't call him that, but he has chief of defense counterparts around the world. And having worked for a chairman myself for quite a bit, I can tell you frequent communication with two countries like Russia and China is not atypical at all for a chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And those communications are they're routine. They're staffed, they're coordinated, and they're transparent, as transparent as they can be.
Would it also be routine in these counterpart conversations?
Wait a second, I think there's another question here. We may have some crossover.
Well, I certainly can't speak to the revelations that are coming out in the book. I think you saw a statement by the chairman's office specifically addressing this issue. But I see nothing in what I've read that would cause any concern.
What is the chairman's role in terms of the nuclear launch, if there were a nuclear launch by the president?
Well, the chairman is the key military advisor to the president, to the commander in chief, and in a sequence of events whereby a commander in chief would be making that decision, that most grave of decisions, the chairman would be intimately involved in that process in providing advice and counsel to both the secretary and to the president. Obviously, the president in this case makes the final decision. And, you know, by statute, by law, he is the prime military advisor to the president. And this would be a military decision of profound proportions here and importance. So he would be absolutely involved in that process, soup to nuts.
All right. So when I first heard this story yesterday, and I Dave, you know this, I get this reaction all the time. I don't believe anything.
Right.
I hear a story like this. I'm like, there's no way. I heard this story. I thought there's something that's not right about this. So I don't know exactly what happened. I know that I have questions about it. I thought this was an interesting reaction, though, from Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who is a military guy himself, might even run for president, because he's a guy that is typically not going to back down when it comes to criticizing someone on the other side. But he's taken a bit of a wait and see approach here, which I thought was interesting.
I know he will address it and will ensure that he addresses it. But this is one of those claims, obviously, That seems a little far-fetched, the idea that an American military general is going to warn an adversary if an attack is coming. As you say, when Donald Trump was never even thinking about a military attack against China, the whole thing is pretty far-fetched.
I think it's far-fetched, too. However, Senator Cotton does say General Milley needs to testify before Congress and explain exactly what happened.
Get more at 971talk.com.